to the Mentoris Project podcast, covering mentorship, books, and more. In this podcast, we interview authors in a new series of books where we meet the men and women who mentored Western civilization. I'm Dr. Peg Lamphere. For more information on the book series, visit mentorisproject.org. Our guest today is Dr. Roseanne Welch, the author of A Man of Action, Saving Liberty, a novel based on the life of Giuseppe Garibaldi. Garibaldi is the man credited with uniting Italy into one country in 1860. In the book, we also meet his Brazilian wife, Anita, who fought by his side, and American journalist Margaret Fuller, who had been sent to Rome to cover the conflict. Welcome, Roseanne Welch.
Thank you so much.
I'll start by asking you, why does Garibaldi matter to us today?
This is one of those questions that you have to roll around in your head, because there's a lot of talk about these men who started countries or united, and they were soldiers. Were they politicians? What were they? And I think those questions we ask about some of the people who lead us today. He was a man whose whole goal was to unite one country based on their language and their culture, and the recognition that they didn't deserve to be separate parts. They all needed to be one. And it was a big job uniting people. And I think we're always talking about how important it is to be united rather than divided. So his actions, I think, are big. And I also think when we get involved in thinking about his marriage with Anita, it was one of the most equal marriages I've ever read about, because they fought side by side. They strategized together. She was the only woman allowed to be with the men as they planned their various battles. And that, to me, was fascinating, because, of course, she also had, three or four kids along the way. And yet all the men took her seriously, because the man who she was married to, who society would have said she belonged to, treated her like an equal. And that's a lesson everybody can use today.
That's interesting. So do you think that maybe you've written kind of a dual biography or biographical novel of the two of them?
In many ways, I believe I did, because it was impossible to ignore. Once they came together, she was the driving force behind much of the group that he gathered in Brazil. And the fact that they followed him to a country that wasn't theirs, because he tried to do some uniting and working in Brazil, and that didn't happen. And then when he finally got to go back to Italy and do his dream, which was that unification, you suddenly realize she brought all these people. They followed her to this country they had no connection to, because they all came to love the mission together. So she brought a lot to him that's not been noticed as much before.
How do you think his childhood influenced his later life and work?
These books, I think, are quite fun in this series, because the folks who edit them are very interested in parents and parent-child relationships and how much your childhood does influence your life. So they asked us to really look into creating moments that show that, because, of course, they're novels, not fully simply biographies. So I really thought a lot about what his mother would have brought to him. And I think that a childhood steeped in reading the best literature that came from his world, and at that time it was Dante, the first piece written in Italian that respected the language as though it was a language that deserved that kind of attention. And I think being steeped in that kind of thing would give you a love for your culture, and that's the thing that fueled him. So being provided those things as a child, I think, made the most. And then his father, you know, got him involved in being a naval person and understanding boating and reading the stars and all those things people did long before computers. So he had a real tutelage from both his parents across his childhood. And I think that makes a difference in anybody's life.
Did his parents have a marriage like he would have, a marriage of relative equals?
What a great question. There, of course, isn't enough paperwork on people like that if they didn't leave behind their own memoirs and whatnot. But I think that's an interesting point that I could agree with, because he was a naval officer and his wife stayed home. And she managed the world, right? I mean, when the women stayed home, they had to pay the bills, they had to manage farms and lands and all the things that were involved in the family while the gentleman was off doing his, you know, naval soldiering, whatever it might be. And I've had modern day friends who were married to naval officers, in fact, where the men were off for 6 months in a submarine doing maneuvers and whatnot. And they were some of the most equal marriages I knew, for that very reason. For most of the year, the woman was in charge of everything back home. So that's an interesting point. And I suppose it's hard to create such a marriage if you didn't see a role model in your own childhood.
Yeah, I that's an interesting point you make about military spouses essentially being heads of household while their serving spouse is gone.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same that we read about, you know, because we're both American historians largely. And you think about the wives of the men who went to the Continental Congress or the Constitutional Congress. They were at home running those farms all by themselves. I mean, they had employees, they had workers, but they were the ones supervising all that. And they did it just fine.
That's true. That's very true. What other relationships fueled Garibaldi's passion?
I definitely think that his mother, and I think that, of course, as we said, Anita, he also had two or three gentlemen who he gathered, if you will, together when he was in Brazil, who followed him. And they were, a couple of them were gentlemen who had been slaves, because, of course, Brazil had slavery just as the United States did. And they followed him into freedom, and they were very loyal to him. And then when they were in Rome, there are a couple of women that came together again as nurses who worked with Anita, but they had husbands who were soldiers with Garibaldi. So they, you know, now that you mentioned the whole equality of the marriage, they even had equal friendships with couples who had equal marriages. So that really probably gave them the view that what they were doing wasn't so unique at all.
Well, what's interesting about it is that it feels revolutionary, which is fundamentally what Garibaldi's about, right, is engaging in a variety of revolutionary activities. No, am I correct on that?
I totally believe you on that, because you're right. If you have the nature to be a revolutionary when it comes to how you want your country organized, that must mean you take that idea into how you want your marriage or your family relationships organized.
Right. Right. That's super interesting.
It is. It's part of your nature. And, you know, it's true. His children, his son will grow up to be a soldier beside him, and his daughters help out. So it is kind of interesting. They all were revolutionaries, both professionally and personally.
What was your impression of Garibaldi before you began researching his life?
I have to admit that I did not know a lot about him. I knew my mother had a couple of books about him because she had done more reading about Italian history than I had. That's our family background, though she was the first generation and I'm the second, so I'm more washed out. And I hadn't ever taken the time to read those books. I kept saying I would, and I never got around to it. And then this opportunity came to me. So I knew that he had done this soldier thing. I knew that he had traveled, you know, across the ocean, which we forget that we think today we're big travelers, but people back then traveled nearly as much when they were involved in these kinds of activities. So I knew that. I also knew that there were people that said, well, doesn't that mean he also might be some sort of a, you know, soldier for hire and just would show up anywhere to do anything? But that's not true, because it had to be a goal he believed in. In fact, he was invited to be a general in the Civil War here in America.
About all I know about him is that.
Right. And because he had failed in Brazil, it was like, oh, he could have done that for a job. But he actually did ask, you know, I want to make sure the war is about ending slavery. And at that point, Lincoln couldn't guarantee it. So he turned the opportunity down. So I do think he wasn't a soldier for hire, that he had a goal and a passion. And I believe that's what I learned along the way, just thinking about how hard he worked for people that he wasn't connected to before he had the chance to go work in Italy again.
What was your favorite find while you were researching his life? The best thing that you discovered?
I think I wanted to like him, and I was able to do that when I discovered, as I mentioned, this Afro-Brazilian former slave. His name was Andrea Aguiar, and he followed Garibaldi, and they became such good friends that he became the padrino, or the godfather, to Garibaldi and Anita's children. And that told me how much he respected his friend, because that's such a personal relationship, you know, as much as the Godfather movie makes us go, oh, that's a stereotype. It does set aside this idea that to make someone a godfather is to say that you're as good as a blood relative to me. So I loved finding out that he wasn't a man who could have possibly been racist or in any way against people from other races, because here he was embracing a man who other people were turning down. He had to convince some of the Brazilian generals to let the slaves fight, which is, of course, reminiscent, as you know, to the United States. Lincoln had to be convinced to let the slaves fight. His generals didn't all want that. So that was a nice thing to learn about him. And then also, I think the romance between he and Anita was truly one of those classic Romeo and Juliet kind of romances. They really were meant to be together, and they broke a lot of social norms because she was married and she came to Garibaldi before her husband had died or agreed to a divorce. And she didn't care because you only have one life, and she wanted to live it to the fullest. And I think that was a really cool thing to discover.
That's really interesting. And that must have caused the two of them a considerable amount of social stress, the forbidden nature of that relationship.
Oh, entirely. And of course, they were Catholic, so that whole thing was wrong.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't take communion until it was finally reported that her husband had passed away. And then they could fully marry. And then they felt they were right with the church again. So those things meant something to them. And breaking those rules meant something to them. But their love was stronger.
What is your own background? You know, what gave you a connection to Garibaldi?
Part of it, of course, was the fact that my grandparents were immigrants from Italy, and from Sicily particularly, and the fact that he fought in Sicily. So I was writing about places I'd heard of, some places I've had the opportunity to visit in my past, and the fact that I find it very interesting. You know, it's so hard to teach all of history anywhere, and yet I never learned about the reunification of Italy. No one had ever, you know, barely in a world history class, maybe. But we seem to jump around so much and we focus so much on English history that I never had been given the chance to know this much. So I was drawn to wanting to feel like if I'm going to say I'm Italian American, I better know something about the place besides who's currently in charge. So that drew me to it. And also, people who break the rules are interesting because...
Yeah.
They get things done, and I appreciate people who get things done.
Yeah, I think people who follow the rules, people who conform, they don't get books written about them, and we don't talk about them 100, 150, 200 years later.
Right, and their achievements, I mean, the fact that what he did so much, his sort of key phrase or whatever you want to call it, was I obey. So when he was asked to do things, even at a certain point, he was asked to stand down when the king asked him to, and he did, as opposed to, I'm just going to keep fighting because I feel like it. The king was like, no, we're done. Pause for a minute, you know, let's get everybody organized. And he listened, and he would take orders from people above him. So he wasn't just this sort of running around crazy, you know, lunatic soldier type guy, but he got what he wanted done, and it's something that of course is true through today, that there would not be a united Italy. My relatives showed me a dictionary of Sicilian language translated into Italian. They were that different, and nobody even thinks about that anymore. So it's a big deal that they're all one country.
Yeah, that, you know, it's interesting. I remember in high school learning, I had to learn the steps for German reunification. This happened in this year, then this happened in that year. And I think I was probably in graduate school before I found out Italy hadn't always been a country and that it had gone through something very much like Italy. I mean, very much like Germany, at about the same time.
Exactly. Isn't that fascinating? We think those countries have been what they are forever. And we're talking 1860 for Italy, and we're busy having a civil war over here in the States. We're practically falling apart, and they're coming together. So it's kind of interesting what was going on worldwide, that, you know, all this changing, all this movement, all this forward momentum was happening.
Yeah, that is interesting. Hey, this book is a novel based on real events. So given that, what was your favorite scene to write?
Gosh, in this case, there were many because partially I love writing the childhood. I love writing people being taught Dante and people being taught the important things in life. I have a cousin in Italy who had just released a book of Sicilian proverbs where she took the proverbs she knew in her childhood, she translated them into Italian, since, as I just said, people don't speak Sicilian anymore, and then she defined them. What did they mean? What would they stand for? So I had this whole book of Sicilian proverbs, and so I made Garibaldi's mother someone who spouted proverbs all the time, and I was getting
them from
the book. Yeah, and so, but they are beautiful ideas that you want to think about that help give children wisdom. And you know, proverbs are just little kind of, you know, little poems that tell people an idea or a moral. And so I filtered a bunch of those in. So making his mother speak those words was fun. And then of course their romance and fighting together, and the idea that in one point she was captured, Anita was captured, and they told her that Garibaldi had died on the battlefield. But but she wasn't sure she believed it, but how do you know what to believe? And she waited till all the soldiers who had captured her fell asleep. she stole one of their horses because she was this marvelous horsewoman. And then she rode off and looked out at the battlefield to see if she could find his body, and it wasn't there. So she ran, continued to run to where the encampment was, and of course found that he was still alive. So writing her escape was really fun too, because there's some chat about it, but there's nothing deeply written about it. So it was fun to see such an empowered woman beating all those guys.
Well, such an adventure that's so gloriously cinematic. Your husband is dead. No, he's not. And then the escape and the riding through the battlefield at night. That's astounding.
Oh, I love that stuff. Yeah,
and
exactly.
Real life. I mean, it really happened.
Exactly. She really did that. You know, if she did it exactly the way I said, or she said exactly what I had her say when she did it, I don't know, but she did it. And who would, you know, as opposed to, oh no, he's dead and fall in a pile of tears and I don't know what to do, and then let these men be in charge.
Hope someone rescues me.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's one thing I'm sure she never hoped for. So, and I think that's why he loved her, because she was so strong.
What theme or themes did you find ran through Garibaldi's life? Or what themes did you find were useful to focus on when you were writing this life, deciding, you know, what to write and what not to write and how to write it?
I think, happily, one was handed to me, which is the whole unification. So this is a life, this is a book that's about unifying people, bringing groups of people from disparate backgrounds into one goal, and then seeing that when they come together with all their best aspects, they create this living, breathing, in this case, that was the expedition of the thousand who followed him across the ocean to Italy and achieved this thing. So unifying, but also then obviously unifying among friends, the fact that they came together in these traumatic situations and they worked together and they all respected each other. And I think that was a big one too, but going back to his childhood, respecting his parents, being respected by them when he made his life choices, respecting Anita, respecting these people that he met along the way that was sort of accidental, all these Brazilians
people
that he wanted to work with.
From him.
Exactly, deeply different. And yet he found something in all of them that he could respect, and he wanted to be part of his world, part of his children's world. So I think unity and respect definitely weave through it. And then, you know, I don't know, is love a theme? Is what, you know, finding that soulmate in life that you're meant to be with, who can tie their world to your goals, and yet without them, you wouldn't have achieved those goals. So it's this really marvelous blending of two people. I think that was really a fun
theme. It is a theme. It's a theme about partnership. Right, that we have in so many novels, you know, the point is the couple gets together and they're in love and then they get married and then they live happily ever after. Boom, thanks for coming. And what you have here is a book about, in many ways, about a marriage that had to get past the, oh, we're in love, and go on with regular everyday life, and like we all do have to do in real life.
Well, I think that's so true. You know, we often say the strange thing about American stories or American movies, certainly, is that the goal is the wedding and then we're done. When in fact, more international stories will often recognize the fact that the wedding is the beginning of the story. And seeing then how these two people are going to combine their lives is the journey, is the fun journey to watch.
Who do you think, given that this is the Mentora series and it is in many ways about mentorship, who do you think Garibaldi's mentors were? And do you think he mentored other people?
I think that his father was one of his major mentors because he taught him everything he knew about traveling on the ocean and all that stuff. And that was something he deeply utilized all his life. So I definitely think he looked up to his father and wanted for his respect and his love. And outside of that, he was really kind of on his own after that. He worked for certain generals, but I don't know that they mentored him so much because he was ahead of them. And they generally tend to try to tamp him down and, you know, oh, no, that's too much. Don't try for that. So I think in the end, he had to become the mentor to all of his men and some of the women who followed the group and took care and did the nursing and stuff. I think in that way, he was the father to all of these gentlemen who followed him and learned from him. And there are still, in some of the museums in Italy, dedicated to the reunification, they literally had like a yearbook where they did have all their photographs taken. And it's everyone who was with him. It's like they wanted to make sure people remembered they were part of this thing. And they wanted to live up to his ideals. So he was mentored by one, but he mentored 1,000.
I like that. More of a mentor than a mentee,
which strikes
me as appropriate for somebody who is a revolutionary and a person who would change the world. Again, probably not much of a follower.
True. Very true.
Well, so then, after all that, I'm curious, Roseanne, who are your mentors or mentor?
Well, you know, it's I've answered this question in the past for other reasons, and it means more to me answering it today because my mentor was my mother, and she passed away a few months ago. She was able to read my first book on Filippo Mazzei, but she did not have the chance to read this book when it was published, which is kind of sad to me since she's the one who fueled me to want to know more about Italy. And since then, I have read her books on Garibaldi. But she's the one who taught me how to read and took me to libraries. And so I really love the goal, one of the goals of this series, which is about, you know, seeing people and their relationships to their parents when you can, you know, work that into the story. Because I do believe my mother set me on the path that I have taken. So definitely her, always and forever her. But also, of course, I've had many good friends who've helped me along the way. Female friends who are professors at the various places where I've taught, and they have fueled my goals and joined me on some of those occasions, as you have, to write a couple of books. So yes, it's the women in my life.
That is a very good answer. Your mom and your female friends. That is a very good answer, Roseanne. Well, any last thoughts about Mr. Garibaldi? Or
I hope that people who read the book enjoy the adventure of it and learn so much about geography and other countries we don't, as we said earlier, don't necessarily teach. Again, even in the United States, we don't really teach anything about the history of Brazil. And it's, you know, it's our southern neighbor. But we do, again, all this focusing on Europe. So I think it was a nice way to teach about some of the important people from other places in the world and what they did in their life. So we're not always so, you know, America-centric, because we do live in the grand world. And people did it even more than we're doing it right now.
Well, Roseanne, thank you so very much for this interview and for contributing to the Mentoris Project podcast. I have enjoyed this immensely, and I thank you for everything that you have said to her today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Mentoris podcast, sponsored by the Barbera Foundation, whose mission it is to promote positive change by inspiring others to engage in their community. Your host has been Dr. Peg Lamphere. Music composed by Patrick Abate, technical direction by Douglas E. Welch. For more information and to read about great mentors in history, visit mentorisproject.org and join us for our next conversation.
Thanks for listening to the Mentoris Podcast, sponsored by the Barbera Foundation, whose mission is to promote positive change by inspiring others to engage in their community. Your host has been Dr. Roseanne Welch. Our music was composed by Patrick Abate, technical direction by Douglas E. Welch, and Kathleen Childress designed our website. For more information and to read more about the great mentors in history, visit mentorisproject.org and join us for our next conversation.